Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts.
Welcome into Blue Jays Nation Radio, episode 200. It's me, Cam Lewis, hosting alongside producer Brett Holden, because Tyler Yaremchuk, the usual host, the usual guy who talks in this voice and does all the ad reads so well, he's in an all-day management meeting today. Brett, are you happy not to be in the all-day meeting? How are you feeling?
Oh my goodness, what a day to have this. Episode 200, the day before opening day. That's some people have called it Baseball Eve, and I'm beyond happy to step in, though. I will say that.
Yeah, we're all thrilled that baseball's finally back, that spring training has mercifully come to a close. I'm not going to be one of those guys who craps all over spring training, because it's great in like mid late February, and it's still, wherever you are in Canada, good chance it's still freezing, good chance it's still cold, and then we can, you know, watch guys warming up, playing catch, wearing Jays jerseys, everyone's smiling. But then as time goes along, these games start to get very boring. You're watching like the seventh inning of a game against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and it's two guys you've never heard of, a pitcher and a batter, and you're like, what is even happening? Like, we got to say, like, spring training has good vibes, but I'd say about a week is fun to watch until it's almost unwatchable.
Yeah, when you're watching Leover Peguero play for a little too long, I know he was like the starting second baseman for the Pirates for a little while, but saying that almost hurts. It's kind of a tough situation once you get into like late March, and you love Florida. Florida's a nice place, but there's only, as you said, when it's cold up in Canada and you're sitting there watching players in the plus 30 heat, you're going, man, I wish we could come back down to earth for a little bit. You kind of get sick of Florida.
Yeah. I mean, we're not even in Florida and we're sick of Florida. Just imagine how the people spending time in Florida feel. You spend too much time there, it starts to get a bit weird. So positive notes for the Blue Jays. In their final spring training tune-up game, Kevin Gausman made his first start of Grapefruit League play and was really good. So that's a positive, though there are going to be a few pitchers starting the season on the injured list. Alek Manoah, as we've already known for a while, and then, of course, late inning relievers Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson. The 26-man roster is pretty much known, but it's not official just yet. There's 9 position players who, barring injury, were locks. That's Vladdy Jr., Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, Alejandro Kirk, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Kevin Kiermaier, George Springer, Dalton Varsho, and Justin Turner. And then John Schneider set his 4 bench spots last weekend, rounding out the position player side of the roster. Brian Servin is the third string catcher who will be filling in for Danny Jansen. Ernie Clement, we've talked about him a bunch. He's on the roster now that Santiago Espinal's been moved. Davis Schneider wasn't really much of a surprise there, given the finish to the season he had last year. And Daniel Vogelbach takes the left-handed slugger spot because Joey Votto is still dealing with his ankle injury. Are there any surprises on the position player's side, or I guess is there anything here that's worth noting, or this is all sort of just what we expected, right?
It's mostly what we expected, but I'll be honest. Well, other than Ernie Clement, I mean, Ernie Clement was fantastic during the during spring training, and almost exactly what you want to see out of a player that you didn't really expect to have that type of spring, and for a team that's sitting there and a fan base that's sitting there going, man, I wish we made more moves, wish we made a more of an impact on the infield or something like that. Having a guy like Ernie Clement to really cement himself potentially as a guy who can end up starting and maybe even take that all-star Santiago Espinal spot from a couple of years ago, where he's just able to kind of fit in all over the place and also provide a really good bat too. I think he was kind of the guy that I'm really excited to see how he turns out for the rest of the season. And the guy that I'm kind of keeping an eye on is Servin as well. Or I always mess up where the R is in his name, Brian Servin. I always go Severin or whatever.
Brian Seven.
Yeah, honestly, he's been playing like a seven for sure. I really was impressed by his spring training. He had a couple real big hits, at least clutch hits, as clutch as you can get in spring training. But I mean, for a player like that who is kind of up and down between the minors and kind of going in between organizations, that spring training is big for a guy like that. And to have an injury like Danny Jansen had on, I mean, this guy needs hockey gloves every time he goes up to the plate, man. I don't understand what's going on.
I feel bad
there
for him.
I do too. I mean, he just, the hands are somewhere that they shouldn't be, but having Servin to be able to step up into this roster and have, honestly, I'm excited to see what he can bring behind the plate when Alejandro Kirk isn't behind the plate or DHing.
So after Kevin Gausman's strong start, it looks like he'll be good for the team's second series of the year when they play the Houston Astros. That'll be starting on April 1, I think it is. Like I said earlier, Manoah, Swanson, Romano off to the injured list. So it looks like the five-man rotation in order is going to be Jose Berríos. He gets the ball on opening day. And then it'll be Chris Bassitt, Yusei Kikuchi in some kind of order. Those two veteran pitchers. And Bowden Francis will also pitch against the Tampa Bay Rays in that opening series. And Gausman, the fifth name. He is the ace, but fifth because, you know, took him a while to get ramped up there in spring training. But thankfully, it looks like no injured list stint, because that is a difficult one to overcome. The bullpen has a whole bunch of spots up in the air. It's, I think, five guys that we kind of knew. If you look at the two guys on the injured list, there's five veterans left behind you sort of know about. Jimmy Garcia, Chad Green, Trevor Richards, Tim Meza, Genesis Cabrera. And then word came out that Wes Parsons will be on the team. It looks like Nate Pearson's going to be on the team. It was right before we started recording. There was I saw a note on Twitter about that. And then Mitch White should probably be there as well, because he doesn't have any options and probably wouldn't clear through waivers given his velocity that he found in spring training. So not a tremendous amount of surprises here, but I think a lot of fans were kind of clamoring to see a name like Ricky Tiedemann. You get like a top prospect there to fire people up. Are you surprised or disappointed that the Blue Jays don't have their top prospect on the opening day roster?
No, not at all. I mean, I think it really speaks A, to the depth that the Jays have in their pitching staff, but B, you want Tiedemann to be able to have meaningful innings and meaningful games. And if you're going to be implementing him in maybe a reliever role or a long reliever role, or even that back half of the rotation, if you're that confident in him from the spring training, then I'm not sure if that's the proper spot for him. If you want him to get basically ace type of treatment somewhere, that I think that's the proper place to have them. And it's really nice to see too guys like Nate Pearson, who's had an up and down career really since being named the number one prospect in the Jays organization. The guy really hasn't been able to find his footing with a couple injuries, this, that, and the other thing. So that's a positive sign for me too. I know injuries were kind of the reason why. But I'm also really interested to see how Wes Parsons does. Again, spring training is a type of situation where you want to, if an injury happens or if a roster player is severely struggling, if you're able to, as a guy who's on the bubble, just to have a really good spring, not even a really good spring, just a spring that proves that you are ready for the season, that's an obvious positive. So being able to see Wes Parsons up there as well, I'm very interested to see how he will be integrated and used going on in the start of the season. And I'm really excited to see how Mitch White does. I mean, you mentioned his velocity was way up in this spring training, or at least something that we didn't expect. And the back half last year for Mitch White was fantastic too. So if he's able to parlay that from last season into spring and now into the start of the year, that trade might be looking a little better than we all started to think back in, what, 2021, 2022? Oh, my God, it's 2024. 2022,
yep.
Man.
So, I'm flying, man.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see how he looks, too.
Yeah, that'd be quite the plot twist if the Blue Jays wound up winning the Mitch White trade a few years later. I mean, I guess there's a few people out there who probably never gave up, but I'm one of the people who did. I was, when they designated Mitch White for assignment, I said, the era is over. We are never going to see him again. And then after watching him throw 99 miles an hour down in Buffalo, I thought, you know what? I'm ready. I'm back on the Mitch White hype train. Here we are. You're going to become the next Ross Stripling here, the next LA Dodger who comes over and becomes a good swingman. Hope springs eternal, and we have all positive vibes in our season opening podcast episode. I realize I didn't do the ad read right off the hop, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it now. This podcast, as always, is presented by Betano. 19 plus, please play responsibly. If you want to throw some money down on the Blue Jays winning the World Series, or if you're on the other side of that and you want to throw some money down on them finishing fifth in the American League East or something like that, go ahead and do it on Betano.ca, but please play responsibly. We will be bringing in Mitch Bannon and Ethan Diamandis from Blue Jays Nation, two senior writers. They are going to talk about all the things that may or may not be happening this season for the Toronto Blue Jays when we are back.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, all right, all right. We are back with Mitch and Ethan. We are going to talk about the season that is upcoming. How's it going, guys?
All good, Cam.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having us.
Sweet. How do you guys feel about the vibes heading into this season? Most people seem to feel less optimistic this year than they did in previous years. Are you guys on the same side with that, or are you guys feeling positive heading into this season?
I think myself, like a lot of other Jays fans, have this sort of numb feeling, if that's the right word, kind of just like very, you know, quietly average expectations with, you know, maybe a hope and a prayer that, you know, Dalton Varsho figures it out, or Vladdy Guerrero, you know, bounces back to that 21 capability. You know, maybe their pitching all stays healthy. You know, maybe Alejandro Kirk has these big explosive stretches. I mean, you add in a couple key spring training injuries, and the vibes certainly aren't getting any better. So if you were optimistic, I don't really know what reason you would have to be optimistic heading into this season. But if you were, you're at least kind of bounced back to my echelon of, you know, skepticism and sort of this quiet, brooding, I don't know, perspective on at least the early parts of the Jay season. Who knows? A big April could change things, but the Jays had a really big April last year, and it was one of the more excruciating seasons we've seen in a while. So you gotta keep the bar low, I think, to start the year.
Mitch, where are you at? Are your vibes positive heading to this, or are you also low expectations, low bar, kind of hope for the best and see what happens?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say I'm brooding as much as Ethan. He's got the brood down for sure. But yeah, it's hard to be like particularly optimistic. I think the expectations are kind of hoping they're as good as last year's team, and anything better would just be gravy. Like, it's hard to see the immense upside in this team. There's not many bats they brought in that could enhance the lineup that much. You're kind of hoping for internal improvements that would balance out any potential regression from the starting rotation or the bullpen health. We've already seen that kind of tested. I think my level is, if they play to the same record they did last year in a more entertaining way, in a more encouraging way, that would be a reason for optimism.
Now that we've wrapped up a month's worth of Grapefruit League games, who's someone that stood out to you guys over spring training? This could be, you know, a regular guy that we all know, we've seen in spring training a half dozen times, or it could be somebody new or a prospect. Is there anyone that seemed interesting during those games in Dunedin?
For me, it was Alejandro Kirk. You know, he's a guy that's easy to forget. You know, he's small. He bats in the 6, 7, 8 part of the order. But in 2022, he was integral in that first half. I mean, he was an all-star. Him and Manoah were the battery mates. And I think Mitch and I calculated potentially the heaviest battery in MLB history. We were going back and taking a look at CC Sabathia and whoever his catcher was. That was another close second. But I mean, Kirk and Manoah were that little duo. They had a good stretch at the All-Star game. And then I think from basically the second half post-All-Star break 2022 to now, you know, Kirk really hasn't been the same guy. You know, the power hasn't been there. He's hitting a lot of ground balls. His floor is really high because he's such a strong OBP guy. He has such a good control of the zone. He's smaller, harder to pitch to, all those good things. So he had exceptional spring numbers. We saw a little bit more pop, a little bit more elevation. And with Danny Jansen down, I mean, he's going to need to – he may, you know, have the same split he would have had with Jansen with the Jays' current backup catcher. But, yeah, if he can just get that ball in the air and work himself back into that sort of quasi-cleanup number five spot, I think the Blue Jays could really use somebody like him on a regular basis.
Mitch, what about you?
Yeah, I had a few guys. Honestly, I feel like the individual performances were pretty good for the Jays in spring. And I know they didn't have a brilliant Grapefruit League record, but that doesn't really matter. A bunch of the guys kind of encouraged me. Vlad, you don't lead the Grapefruit League in OBP by accident. It was like 500 for him, which is solid. The approach at times still looked like he was going to chase that slider away a lot, but then at other times he reined it in. So maybe it's going to trend in the right direction. Ernie Clement hit a bunch more line drives, obviously made his way onto this team. That was impressive.
Yeah. But
the guy who I'm excited for is Yariel Rodriguez. Like, he didn't have maybe the gaudy strikeouts I thought he would watching his few outings, but he looks like a major league pitcher. And for the amount they got him for, kind of the risky deal they signed him to, that's definitely encouraging with his first taste of facing big league hitters. I think he's probably going to be what Mitch White will start the season as, kind of like that long man, get us innings, maybe start a few games by the end of the year. And he could be a much better version of that.
That's a perfect segue, because I was about to ask you guys about pitching. And a big reason for anxiety heading into the season has been because of injuries to Toronto's pitching staff. Kevin Gausman, of course, finally made his first Grapefruit start in the team's spring training finale earlier this week. Alek Manoah, Jordan Romano, and Eric Swanson will all start the year on the injured list. How do you feel about the team's pitching situation, and who are you looking at to step up in the absence of some of those players?
The pitching situation is sketch, to say the least. I mean, the Blue Jays benefited from extreme health last year, and also like everybody kind of pitching to a best case scenario. So guys are bound to regress, I think, in 2024, whether it's Yusei Kikuchi or Chris Bassitt, you know, just getting you know, beat to death with hard contact or there's an injury or two. But in the interim, I think Bowden Francis, I think it starts with him, right? We've been teased with, you know, a really successful relief year in 23, you know, one poor appearance in 22 and some struggles in the minors in 22. But, you know, I'm really excited to see how he will do with a little bit more run as a starter. Sorry, my fire alarm's going off. Let's go to Mitch for a second.
Your take was too hot. The fire alarm's going off. Yeah, Mitch, how are you feeling? How do you feel about the team's pitching staff, and who are you kind of looking at there to step up in the absence? You got Manoah missing, Kevin Gausman. We think he's going to be good to start in the team's second series against Houston. Two of their best relievers are gone. Who do you think might step up? Like, who are you feeling good about this year?
Yeah, it's Ethan kind of nailed it with this. The situation is definitely sketchy, especially when you're starting against four potential playoff teams, 13 games in 14 days. Like, they're going to really have to lean on the bullpen, which I think is going to mean a lot of Trevor Richards outings, probably some heavy innings from Mitch White. I think if Mitch White can just like come out firing, he could get a lot of people back on his side. Like, we know he can throw 97 and maybe he can control it. But I think Trevor Richards is probably going to be the guy in the interim. He's a guy who can maybe pitch in the eighth and ninth innings if he's really dealing, and also a guy we've seen go for three or four inning outings. So during this first couple weeks stretch, when a bunch of guys are coming back from injury, I could see him pitching in a bunch of different roles for this team and logging a pretty heavy amount of innings.
Ricky Tiedemann was a name, speaking of pitchers, that generated quite a bit of buzz with his strong spring training finale against the Pirates. He's not going to be on the team's opening day roster, which is probably not super surprising because he's young, hasn't thrown a ton of innings, not in the 40-man roster. But how do you guys figure he's going to play into Toronto's plans this season, and what should be a reasonable expectations for the team's top prospect?
Yeah, I guess we got to see what kind of leash he gets in AAA, whether that starts with, you know, four or five innings out of the gate, or if it's, he'll be in the rotation. There's no doubt about that. So I think it's going to come down to how he handles that workload and then how he bounces back from it. He was his whole season last year was kind of washed away with injuries. Like, he had, I think it was a bicep strain or something really early. And when an injury like that happens early, you don't really get in a rhythm. And then they're kind of, you know, more concentrated on recovery and how you feel in between starts. So as long as he's bouncing back quick, I think he'll be up here pretty soon. I mean, barring the Jays have a lot of these kind of middle relief, you know, the Yariel Rodriguez types or the Wes Parsons guys who can start and maybe work out of the bullpen as well. So I'm going to expect that the Blue Jays are only calling up Tiedemann if, you know, it's happening in September maybe, and they're, you know, ditching the starting pitching innings limit and just letting him go for one inning as a reliever. So a la Nate Pearson or whatever, I could see that happening. But if there is an injury, a season ending injury, let's say, to Chris Bassitt, then Tiedemann will step up.
Too hot again. He's saying Ricky Tiedemann's going to win the Cy Young Award this year, and the fire alarm's going off, and it's just going nuts. Mitch, what do you think? Do you feel like Ricky Tiedemann's going to play a big role in the Blue Jays this season? It was only a couple years ago that Alek Manoah made, what was it, six starts in AAA Buffalo and then came up and was arguably one of the Blue Jays' best starters. Is there anything like that in the cards for Ricky Tiedemann, or is that just a bit much?
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to go on the Manoah path, just because you look back at who that team broke camp with, and it was like pretty obvious they needed instant starting pitching help, and Manoah just put himself in that position. I think Tiedemann is maybe a little more blocked. Like, they have some pretty serious pitching depth this year. It's going to get called on starting pitching, especially in the first couple of weeks here. I see Tiedemann as like the seventh or eighth option for them, just because they're going to want him to log four or five innings every 5 days for Buffalo and prove he can do that. I think Ethan's right. In the dream world, he's the September call-up who's slinging it Chris Sale style out of the pen and just looks nasty. But if they have a guy down for 6 weeks in the middle of the season, I could see them giving Tiedemann run. I doubt they call him up for a spot start, just because they have the Wes Parsonses, the Yariel Rodriguezes, they're inevitably going to start Trevor Richards once again. But if they need a guy for an extended period of time, I think they could give Tiedemann that shot if he's dealing in AAA.
Sticking with the conversation, I guess, about prospects, beyond Ricky T, who's number one pretty much unanimously. Everyone knows Tiedemann's the big name in the team system. But are there any other minor leaguers you're going to keep a real eye on this season? Like maybe someone who's in AAA that's close to making the jump, or maybe somebody all the way down in Dunedin or Vancouver who you think has a lot of upside. Who's a prospect you think fans should know about this year?
I got two guys. Number one is Damiano Palmigiani. I think this guy, he's a big body. He, you know, whatever defensively, I'm not too keen on his defensive metrics. But I know his batted ball profile, right? Like he's a decent OBP guy, big, strong, long swing, lots of power. He's the sort of, and you know, he seems more advanced for, you know, the experience that he's gone through. So now he's going to start in AAA, I imagine. He'll get a chance to swing it. He has an interesting story, right? Venezuela and then Canadian and then play for Canada at the WBC. He should be a really exciting prospect. So Palmigiani is one guy that I think could maybe be a September, August type guy. Probably not, probably more toward 2025, but he's an exciting guy. And then Alan Roden is another guy that I'm looking forward to watching. He kind of toned down that fun swing that everyone was jazzed about with the high hands and all that, but you know, it's clear that he's got the contact ability and the exit velo potential to be a real impact bat at some point in the future. So those two hitters are two guys that I'm going to be watching in the minors this year.
Yeah,
Mitch, what about you?
I'm a little upset that was the one answer Ethan didn't get cut off by the looking forward to talking about Roden too. Shai Davidi wrote a really good piece about the changes he made and everything he was doing in spring. And Shai doesn't write prospect features about that if guys in the organization aren't really high on a guy. And so they clearly like Roden. He's been he is this team's only outfield prospect in the last 6 years. I can't even think of another young outfielder who's come up and been a productive player. So Roden could be that guy. And just because they don't have any other guys, I expect him to get a crack at the big leagues this year. If there's a couple injuries, he kind of has everything you want in the bat, like a good walk rate, good contact skills. And he hit the ball really hard in spring, put a couple 100-mile-an-hour liners into gaps. Like he looks like he can be, he's not going to be an all-star. He's not going to be a 4 or 5 win player. But if he becomes a good walk 2 or 3 war player, I think he's going to be a useful piece for the team as early as this year. Another guy I'd kind of dangle out there is maybe this is the year that Hagen Danner finally stays healthy, finally gets an extended run in a bullpen. He's got a big arm, and he kind of I think a lot of people have soured on the Nate Pearson experience. I don't know if we're ever going to get that 8th inning shutdown 100-mile-an-hour guy. I think Danner is just as good as Pearson, and if he gets a shot in this big league bullpen, I think he could hold it down.
Damn, that's an interesting one. That is a name, because he wound up finishing last season. He made his debut and then he wound up on the 60. It was just the one, I think he only, was it one or two batters that he faced before getting hurt and then wound up on the 60-day injured list. That's a super unfortunate way to have your debut go. That's also an interesting point you brought up about the outfielders, because I'm thinking, who was the last outfielder the Jays developed? Is it Kevin Pillar? It honestly might be.
Not many guys.
Dalton Pompey. Not too much success.
Still standing at third base in Kansas City. Still just waiting there. So next question. It was a disappointingly quiet winter for Ross Atkins. I think everyone kind of knows that. There was expectation, Shohei Ohtani. And if it's not going to be Ohtani, then, we're going to get Juan Soto and they're going to sign Yamamoto. And fans went nuts when it started with Ohtani and the expectations went so high. And then it wound up being, you know, Justin Turner, Yariel Rodriguez, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Not really what people were looking for. But Atkins has also mentioned that, given the payroll, the team should have the flexibility to make some big adds ahead of the trade deadline. It's obviously way, way, way too early for this, because we don't even know if the Jays come July, August are going to be good enough to be buyers or who the other selling teams are going to be. But if you're thinking a few months ahead and you're just kind of looking at the Blue Jays roster, who else out there in baseball might be terrible? Are there any names you kind of have in mind for maybe some players we could get excited about? Think it's late June, early July, and we're obsessing over which guy the Jays are going to trade for. Do you have anyone in mind yet, or am I just way too early?
No, I got a couple guys, and I'm hoping that able to poach Mitch's answer here. Just take the pluck right ahead of him in the snake draft here. Number one guy for me is Willy Adames. I think I knew it. he's kind of everything that Toronto would need, right? Like, he's an exceptional defender. He plays the six, right? So he's a shortstop. Who knows how that would go with Bo? They would probably move Adames over to third, even though he is an above average defensive shortstop. Yeah, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Anyway, his power profile is what Toronto needs, right? This is a guy now that, like, I don't remember him hitting for 30 homers when he played for Tampa Bay, but apparently he's unlocked that ability in Milwaukee. So he's a guy that, you know, fans kind of expected Milwaukee to deal this offseason. They didn't. They went and moved Corbin Burns. So Adames will be probably another guy that's talked about quite a little bit, especially after the Brewers got Joey Ortiz back from Baltimore. And then number two, let's see if I get Mitch on this one too. I think Jorge Soler will be back in the market. And I think a lot of those guys that signed those one-year deals. So Jock Peterson went to Arizona. Arizona will be competing. He won't be available, right? Presumably. But who knows about the Giants? I know they added Blake Snell. We'll see where they are competitively. But that Jorge Soler, I think, is like 40 games of him is like the perfect sample size. Like, if you can tell he's on one of those hot seasons as opposed to those, you know, 180 strikeout seasons, like I think getting him for 1 or 2 months would be an exceptional addition to the Blue Jays lineup, or someone with that sort of power upside, like an Adam Duvall, though I think he returned to Atlanta, so I doubt they'll trade him, but one of those guys.
You only took one of mine, Ethan. I Adames was on my list. He's just like a natural guy who is almost certainly going to get traded at the deadline, and he's been a fit for the Blue Jays all offseason, especially if they're willing to kick him over to third. I got a couple others, thankfully, that you didn't take. I think Ha-Seon Kim in San Diego, we've heard some rumblings about him to Toronto for a while. They were in on him when he first came over, so there's clearly like a base level of interest in the organization there. He can play second. He can play third. He can be your backup shortstop. He's going to be the Padres shortstop this year. If they have another season that goes absolutely awry in San Diego, I like the fit there, especially if the offense he showed last year kind of keeps up. And another guy, if they really want to make a big splash, is Luis Robert of Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
He just would immediately come in and become arguably this team's best hitter, maybe second best behind Bo. If Atkins wants to walk the walk behind that, we have room to add at the deadline line. A big splash on a guy like Robert would be the move.
Yeah, that'd be an exciting one. I mean, I think we can all say in advance, like, you can't predict ball, but I'm comfortable predicting the Chicago White Sox will again be very bad this season. It would make sense for them to sell some guys off. And Luis Robert is one of the names that I've definitely seen people throw around that seems like it would be. The Blue Jays, we've talked so long. Like, it was, I mean, even like last January, we were talking about how they needed that big right-handed bat. And here we are over a year later. They have not acquired that big right-handed bat just yet. Maybe it'll come this year in the middle of the season. But focusing on just the early part of the season, Mitch wrote about this for the website. We published it this morning. And the Blue Jays will be facing an absolute gauntlet to start the year off. It's a four-game set at the Trop, the House of Horrors, Tampa Bay. We all hate it. We all know what it's like there. And then immediately they do a three-game set in Houston, another three-game set in the Bronx, where it's the Yankees' home opener. And then they finally go home to Toronto for their own home opener against the Seattle Mariners. What are some reasonable expectations for that, you know, 10-13 game run at the beginning of the season? Because this looks, when you look at the schedule, I remember the 2017 season. It was after the two playoff years. They got off to like a 1-10 start or something like that. I don't think we're expecting the 2017 season, but this is a hard enough schedule at the beginning of the year that things could go sideways pretty quickly, right?
For sure. And now that Toronto doesn't have Whit Merrifield to hit like 15 homers at Tropicana, that first series could be a little bit challenging. But here's when I think about this Blue Jays team last year. Like, it's not like they were kicking the crap out of the teams they were supposed to beat anyways, the Oaklands and the Cincinnati's. I mean, they were taking 2 or 3, and then it was a 1-1 game against Hunter Green in the eighth inning on the Sunday of that series, or this hypothetical series I'm talking about. So I don't know. I successful 500, maybe you come out of the stretch at 500. Like, is that, but if this is what we're talking and these are the expectations we have as fans, then I don't know. Like, it clearly tells you that our hopes are not that high this season. But I mean, inside that clubhouse, I hope the Blue Jays believe that they can win two out of three series here, because I think that should be the expectation. But if I'm putting on my glasses as a fan here and, you know, saying what would I accept or what would I deem a success, probably 500, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think if they come out of the first 13 games, 7-6, you're calling that a big win. Like, if you can play above 500 baseball against all the other teams who are going to make the playoffs, you're a good team. So I think anything over that would be a brilliant start for the Blue Jays, especially when they're going to have to navigate not having Swanson and Romano for probably the first 10 days of the season, maybe longer. Gausman's probably not going to be stretched out past 75 pitches for his first outing. Like, they're going to have to navigate this first four series of the season, and you don't want to be navigating against four of the best teams in the league. If there's one positive, Yankees don't have Gerrit Cole, Astros don't have Justin Verlander, but you know that Marcus Stroman is going to absolutely shove for a series against the Jays. Like, he's probably had that one penciled in ever since he saw the schedule come out and signed with the Yankees. So it might not be the easiest stretch. And I think 7-6 would be a big win for the first 13 games.
Speaking of expectations, and I guess zooming out for more big picture expectations, what does a successful 2024 season look like for the Jays? Because I think, like, we all kind of know it's the playoff results, but we saw last year the playoffs are so random. Like, what if the Jays this season win over 100 games? They have their best season since the 90s, but then they bow out in the division series like the Braves or the Dodgers did last year. Would that be a failure? Or hypothetically, if they were to win like 83, 84 games and sneak into the playoffs, but go on a deep run like the Diamondbacks did last year, are we calling that a win? Like, if it's something like that, is it all about the playoffs, or is there anything the Jays can do during the regular season that would make this year like a slam dunk no matter what? Or are we all just playoffs no matter what?
I think we're playoffs no matter what. I think that's probably the expectation that a lot of Blue Jays fans have. I don't see this club winning 100 games. I know, hot take, right? but I think the Blue Jays are in Toronto Maple Leafs territory. You got to win. Let's never mind a playoff series. Let's start with a playoff game.
Yeah.
I mean, this club hasn't won a playoff game since 2016, right? I mean, they've 0-1 like sweep in 2020 and then 22 and 23. So six playoff losses in a row. Toronto's got to win a playoff game, ideally a game one to get them some momentum for game two. But yeah, I think this season will be judged on playoff success if it gets that far. But if this club is floundering during the regular season, then there could be some changes to the front office or to the managerial staff. But yeah, I think playoffs at the end of the day is how this team will be evaluated.
If they come out, win 100 games, I would call the season a success. Even if they lost every single playoff game they then had, just because that would mean like all of the individual performance you had on your team were like way above expectations. And you could go into the year after that with like what you thought was a 100-win team because it won 100 games the year before. Like Ethan said, I think we can be pretty confident this Jays team's not going to win. So I do agree the more realistic like benchmark for success this season would be doing anything in the playoffs. Like, I think even if you want to go even more micro, just like hitting in the playoffs. Like, we know this team has a good rotation. They haven't hit in the playoffs in the last couple of years, the last couple cracks at it. So just like hit a home run in the playoffs, like show up. Anybody but Danny Jansen, do something in the playoffs. They had that one game where they put up all the runs and then immediately gave them back to the Mariners. Yep. So I guess hit in the playoffs, hold the lead. Season success.
Don't look anything like how you looked last year. Don't look like how you looked in that series against Seattle and the years of success. We just don't want to see any of that again. Yeah, I mean, now that you put it out there like that, just winning a game in the playoffs is actually like, yeah, I hadn't really thought about it that way. But when you put it together, in the Bo and Vlad era, it's been sweep, sweep, sweep. So it's pretty much this year. It's if they don't win a series in the playoffs, it's hard to call that a win. And Ethan, you mentioned there might be more pressure on certain people. I know a lot of the fans are all over Ross Atkins after his offseason. A lot of people are also all over John Schneider as well. There was an article earlier this week, Jim Bowden of The Athletic, he did a bold predictions article. And one of them was that the Blue Jays are going to fire John Schneider. He's the first manager that's fired in 2024. And they're going to replace him with Don Mattingly, who is their offensive coordinator. What do you make of that? Do you think Schneider's on the hot sheet? Like, should he be, or like, is Atkins going to be allowed to fire another manager, or what's going to happen there?
It would be pretty odd for Atkins to fire two managers, I think, especially, well, you can look at it from two perspectives. So you can look at it from Ross Atkins covering his ass, I think. And it wouldn't really make a lot. I think he's probably out the door before Schneider's out the door, if that makes sense. I mean, he picked Charlie Montoyo. Obviously, that wasn't that didn't end up being a great choice. So he goes with an internal guy who has such a strong connection to the core of this Blue Jays roster, having, you know, coached them up through the minor leagues, Jordan Romano, Tim Mayza, Danny Jansen, Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, literally everybody, all the in-house guys. So, and basically the Blue Jays kind of manage as a committee already a little bit, like Pete Walker, Don Mattingly, John Schneider kind of all pool their thoughts together and make a lot of decisions that way. So unless you're really looking for a scapegoat or something to fire up the team, and the way this team's built, I don't think that's the motivator for them. I mean, I guess it kind of worked in 2022, but I think that had more to do with Schneider taking over and his leadership versus removing Montoyo from the equation. So I don't know. I mean, I guess Don Mattingly could take over, but it's not like he's been an exceptional manager either. So people seem to criticize John Schneider quite a bit. And I mean, it's fair, I think, after how the playoffs unraveled, but yeah, I don't really see it. I think if there are any cracks in the structure next season in 2024, I think everything's coming down. So I think it's Atkins gone. I think it's going to be a full sort of churn in the front office and in the manager spot. So a mid-season firing, unless it's a Charlie Montoyo repeat from 2022, where the club is very clearly underperforming and needs something to, you know, force it to adjust, I think Schneider will at least do the, you know, the entirety of the 24 season.
Yeah, I agree with most of what Ethan just said. It's unless the season goes in a way that would be like very unpredictable, if they're going to underperform, it's because the offense isn't very good. The pitching gets hurt, like not in ways that you would put the blame on John Schneider. Like maybe he makes a bunch of crazy bullpen moves in the first 3 months and everyone's on him and he gets himself fired because of that. But I think if they're going to underperform, it's because of how the team is built. It's because Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is the team's starting third baseman, and that Varsho, Vlad, and Springer all don't bounce back. And you, the investment you made in the offseason into this new offensive approach and trying to get more out of your own hitters didn't work. And those are things that fall on the leadership in Atkins more than they do on Schneider. So I think Ethan's right that if heads are going to roll, it'll start at the top with Atkins, just because he's put his eggs in this team's basket and in John Schneider. So it's not necessarily Schneider's job to lose now.
Yeah, you'd think that. That's kind of what I said when I was asking the question, is it's like it would seem sort of odd if Atkins was allowed to pick another manager and then fire that said manager, because even going all the way back when these guys first showed up, it was John Gibbons still, and then no more John Gibbons, off to Charlie Montoyo, Schneider. You know, they talked about Schneider like he was the manager of the future, and to pull the plug on that in what would be his second full season in the bench would be pretty shocking. You'd have to kind of think like, all right, if this is happening, the whole thing's blowing up, where Bo and Vlad are getting traded, everything's changing. You'd have to think, but then again, you also consider, look, they just made all these renovations to the stadium, poured a whole bunch of money in, and it's going to be pretty hard to, you know, get people to spend that cash to sit in those seats if the team's navigating another rebuild yet again. So I guess we'll see. But the last question I had for the two of you guys is since we just talked about Jim Bowden's bold prediction of Schneider and Mattingly and this and that, do you guys have any wild, weird predictions heading into the season, either just about the Jays or about the league as a whole? What would you say is your boldest take going into 2024?
I already gave my hot takes and the world responded by giving me a fire alarm. I don't know. I'll get kind of granular, but I think like Bo Bichette will finally get his flowers around the league this time. Like, let's go as far as to say he finishes top five in AL MVP voting. I think this is the season where he's always around 200 hits, but I think this will be the year that he finally exceeds that threshold. And watch for him to set a new record in home runs as well. I think he'll get above that 30 mark. he's weird with that. He doesn't always swing out of his shoes. He likes to go the other way and you know, just focus on getting the barrel inside the baseball and driving it to wherever the ball is placed. But watch for him to take a few more hacks. I think, you know, especially down the stretch when he was hurt, like, he's one of those guys that has the ability to, like, look around and be like, crap, like, no one else is hitting for power. No one else is homering. Like, I got to go up there and I got to swing to homer to do damage. So we'll see how early that adjustment has to come. But I'm going to say that Bichette finishes in the top five in AL MVP voting.
That's great. Yeah.
Those are some good ones. Ethan kind of teased one of mine earlier. I think Alejandro Kirk's going to be an all-star again this year. I'm also believing what I've seen in the spring. He got off to a really slow start and slow season last year just because, well, he had like the shenanigans in spring training with having the child, maybe going to go to the WBC. It was just a chaotic year for him. I've liked what I've seen in spring. I think he can get back to all-star form and be like the second or third best hitter on this team. Another hot take, I think Yariel Rodriguez is going to pitch big innings in a playoff game for this team, whether it be in relief or maybe even starting the game. I think he's got the potential to do that. And a third one, this was one of my hot takes last year, and it burned me bad, like catastrophically bad. But I think Dalton Varsho is going to hit 30 runs this year. I'm still on the Dalton Varsho train. We know he struggles with the high fastball. We know he's got holes in his swing. But everything I'm reading from him this year sounds like he's kind of taking the Danny Jansen approach of like, I've got holes in my swing, but I'm just going to like hit the homers I can hit and just like spit on all the pitches like up in the zone. Jansen just stopped swinging at stuff away and just tried to become a pull merchant, and it really worked for him when he's healthy. I think Varsho's got the potential to just hone in on what he's good at and get back to kind of the Diamondbacks form.
I'm going to, you also took a prediction from last year, so I'm just going to go ahead and take my exact one that I said when I was doing this version of the podcast last year. And I'm going to say that somebody on the Blue Jays is going to throw a no-hitter this season. There's only been one no-hitter in Blue Jays history, and this pitching staff is too good not to throw a no-hitter. I don't know if it's going to be, see, last year I thought it was going to be, you know, Jose Berríos, Kevin Gausman, one of them throws like a 9-inning no-hitter, dominant start. Now, I think it's going to be like a combined no-hitter, sort of similar to the one. Remember when the Jays got no-hit last year by the Tigers, and it was someone had a good start, like six, you know, no-hit innings, and then it was two or three relievers or something like that. You got to think the Jays have a pitching staff that's that has enough depth, enough quality arms that they could go and pull this kind of thing off. You'd love to see it, but who knows? Where do you guys think the Jays are going to finish in the standings this year? Do you have any hope they're going to win the division, or do you feel like this is New York's or Tampa's or Baltimore's? Baltimore was the breakout team last year, but they've got all those injuries. The Yankees have Soto. Tampa's a weird one. They always have that depth. Who do you think is going to win the American League East?
I think the Orioles are going to win the American League East. I think now taking a gander down New York's starting rotation is kind of getting a little messy. There are too many questions there for me to go ahead and just award them as the favorites to win the AL East. As far as where Toronto will end up, I think they're going to battle with Tampa. I think it's going to be close. Or New York, to be honest, whoever that third team is. I could see the Blue Jays again being the second or third wild card in the American League and ending up potentially on the road for another best two of three. I think the Blue Jays are kind of destined for that. They're anywhere from 85 to 90 wins. And in the American League East, that really doesn't cut it. You got to win closer to 100. So, yeah, I think it's the same old fate. You don't even have to watch the season. Just tune in October, and hopefully the Jays will play more than two games in a postseason series this time.
For where the Jays finish, I'm in a similar boat to Ethan. I think like 87, 88 wins, third wildcard team, heading to a Cleveland or Minnesota for a playoff series. Maybe Detroit, if everything goes with the Tigers. But in terms of in the division setup, I'm a lot higher on the Yankees. I'm kind of buying a lot of their bounce backs. I really love Austin Wells, their young catcher. I think Carlos Rodon might be like really nasty this year. He's looked like up and down in spring, but then he pitched like a no hitter at the end of his spring training. So if he's going to bring that to the season, that could be a problem. They'll get Cole back. I think the Yankees win the division. I got the Orioles second, the Jays third, nudging out the Rays by like a game for the third wild card spot. I think this is going to come down to the wire, Jays versus Rays for the last playoff spot. And it's going to be nightmare fuel for Blue Jays fans in the last week or two of the season.
Yeah, the American League's definitely gotten more competitive over the past few years. I think it was the 2022 season. We're going down the stretch in September, and it was like, there is no playoff race here. Last year's was slightly more interesting, but even then, not really. It was still pretty obvious they were going to be one of those six teams, but now teams are better. I mean, there's a lot of depth all around baseball. Ethan, Mitch, thank you so much for joining me. Is there anything you guys want to talk about before we go? Things you guys are getting up to this year, or where we can find you on social media and on the internet and such?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Ethan Diamandis. I'll probably be freelancing for a few different places, still TBD where that will be, but you can find some of my work here at Blue Jays Nation.
Yeah, I'm at Mitch Bannon on Twitter. I put out all the different places I write for there. You can see my weekly work at Blue Jays Nation as well, and I'll be at a bunch of Blue Jays games, so hopefully they're entertaining to watch. Thanks for having us.
Hell yeah. Yeah, no worries. Thanks again for coming on. We'll definitely have the two of you guys on again multiple times throughout the season. Let's hope it's a fun one full of good vibes and we're not sitting here talking about who's getting traded and them blowing it up, who's getting fired. Let's hope it's we're getting excited about which players they're buying ahead in the trade deadline and this and that, and it's not quite a slog. Let's hope it's positive vibes.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.